Another big bond auction in the United States with a big appetite from investors. We'll look at what that means today. Plus, Toyota reportedly agrees to the wage demands in Japan. Could this be the signal for the Bank of Japan to lift rates next week? The UK sees small growth by the tiniest wafer-thin margin. And TikTok, has it had its time, at least as far as the US is concerned? And how will China take that? It's Thursday, the 14th of March, 2024. It's the Morning Call from NAB. Good morning. Well, a small fall in the US dollar, just 0.1% down on the day, but it was much lower for most of the session. The Aussie dollar, meanwhile, up a quarter percent, just above 66.2 US cents. The euro is up 0.2%. The pound only just in the green today. Not such a great day for tech stocks. The NASDAQ is down more than half a percent at close in the US. The S&P is 0.2% lower as well, but the Dow is up. But just 0.1%, all of that at the close. The Russell 2000, though, that's up 0.3%, up quite a bit more than that earlier. And another record day for Bitcoin. A lot of Bitcoin is coming via their ETFs, apparently. In Europe, the Euro Stoxx 50 and the FTSE 100 up a little over 0.3%. The CAC 40 closed up 0.6%. We've got big moves up in oil this morning, 2.9% higher for WTI, 2.9% for Brent as well, which is just over 84 a barrel. Bond yields are moving higher, up 4 basis points for 10-year treasuries, up 4 for German 10-year bonds as well, up 7 for 10-year gilts in the UK. Aussie 10 years yesterday climbed 7 basis points to 4.01%, on futures now up another 5 to 4.06%. But let's start looking at bond yields first of all with NAB's Gavin Friend, because there's no shortage of appetite, Gavin. $22 billion worth of 30-year bonds auctioned in the US overnight. They sold $25 billion last month, which had a bid to cover ratio of 2.4, this time 2.47, which is much higher than we've seen in the 10 auctions before that. So even though there's a lot of them, investors still want them.
Yeah, morning, Phil. I think this just goes to what we've been seeing, haven't we, in these various rounds as yields come down, they move back up again because, well, in the main, US economic data just refuses to give up the resilient look, and that timeline when the Fed's going to pull the pin on easing policy just continues to get pushed back. And you can see that in market pricing. The June pricing now is, just 18 basis points now, so it's not even fully priced. And, so the yields move up, but that does draw investors in, particularly, I think, at the longer term. I mean, look at the shorter term auctions in the US earlier this week. I mean, the demand was at best lackluster. So there is a draw to these longer auctions, evident. And we're in that kind of space, wherever it may be on the yield curve, US, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, above 4%, where it is, pulling in people and saying, "Well, I'll have some of that," because in the back of their minds, the big picture is that there's still further work to go on disinflation over time. The issue, of course, is that whole issue of the last mile is the hardest, and as we saw with the CPI. Yeah. Earlier in the week.
And how far do we go with rate cuts? In fact, Sir Aaron Black, who's a writer for the Wall Street Journal today, is saying, perhaps we have to accept the neutral rate is going to be a lot higher than we're used to, which would mean that we can see growth, which is why equities are performing quite well, even though interest rates are still higher. Maybe that's just the acceptance. And so that's why the interest in long-dated bonds, we're not going to get as many cuts as we expected, in other words, this year.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know yet to what extent, a demand for higher term premium is going to come in. I think it's difficult when you think that there's going to be a slowdown that's probably going to end up in rate cuts. The Fed is telling us it wants to, cut rates. We'll find out next week with the new dot plot whether the three cuts that they got in for the median for 2024 has been cut to two. And I suspect, even given the pushback we've had in markets over the last few weeks, if the Fed were to do that, that would surprise, because it doesn't really sit that easily with what Jay Powell said to Congress last week that we're close to having the confidence to move. If you're suddenly going to do that, although he could argue that the dot plot is not a forecast, it's just, you know, it's where members of the committee think it'll be. I think it would reverberate with the market, and to be honest, you know, we've got the Fed meeting next week. Nobody expects them to do anything. We've got, you know, plenty of time between, you know, now and the 1st of May meeting or the 12th of June meeting, which is where people are, you know, sort of focusing or dialing in on. I guess there's a bit more focus on July now, but there's still plenty of time to go for these things to come into line. But it's difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, you've got, as we saw in that CPI report this week, you know, things that we worried about last month, like owner's equivalent rent, dropped back by 0.2, and yet only to be replaced by a 0.1 rise in primary rents, which OER is actually derived from, and a whole bunch of other things that have gone up, drug prices, used car prices, those kinds of things. In a way, that kind of typifies this last mile is the hardest. It's almost last mile inflation whack-a-mole. It's just coming everywhere, but you can't, it's not consistent, you know.
I like the analogy. So yeah, I mean, but the strength in the economy as well, isn't there? That's the other issue. So, and that's why we're seeing equities doing so well, because obviously there's an expectation of growth. And then we've seen it in oil prices today, big rises, because we had a big fall in inventories in the US last week, which you'd assume, I mean, it's only 1 week, but it was the forecast was we'd see it rise 1.4 million barrels. It actually fell 1.5 million. So there's clearly demand for oil, which would imply there's growth happening.
Yeah, I think on that oil story, you know, it's the first shift lower in stockpiles in seven weeks. I take your point that it was lower than what was projected, but then it also came against the news of that Ukrainian drone strike on a Rosneft oil installation that produces in Russia some 340,000 barrels per day. So there's a little bit of uncertainty about that. I just think on the growth side, you know, it's not, we don't have a clear pattern for all the strength that we see. Look at things like we learned this week, the very important NFIB small business measures that come out in various indexes that come out in terms of hiring intentions, pay, CapEx intentions. They're plunging. They really are plunging, yeah. Which is telling you that the background of America, the small business community, is not in the same place that financial markets are. You know, that they are struggling to probably access finance, tighter credit conditions, those kinds of things. That's a different set to, you know, private capital or funds that have been able to lock in money for longer term through bond auctions or whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, there's a slug of government money, isn't there? Yeah. But that's not going to be helping the small business sector. That's going to be helping the big end of town, obviously. So in Japan, so you talked about the Fed meeting next week, of course, the Bank of Japan next week as well. Are they going to lift rates? Well, reports are that Toyota has met wage demands in full. We haven't got any exact figures, but, you know, there are 5 million auto workers in Japan. So this is seen as a bit of a bellwether for wage demands. So this is the early result. And that has increased expectations that the Bank of Japan will indeed lift rates next week.
It has. I mean, certainly the meeting next week is live, as is the meeting on the 26th of April. To your point, everybody's now waiting. We've had a number of media reports from various unions. You mentioned Toyota. Others have been, you know, coming out with various numbers above 5%. Toyota weren't explicit. We understand from the media that really what the BOJ is looking for is a significant breach or move higher than last year's first reading on the Rengo survey, which represents the main body of unions, of 3.8%. And from what you can see out there that the media is reporting, settlements, the ones that are giving the numbers, are well above that. We're going to have to wait and see until on Friday to see what that number is. It does suggest, you know, on the one hand, if you look at all the comments coming out from politicians and the BOJ, that they're readying a move. Perhaps this time round it's a drop of the YCC and the ETF buying. In terms of actually raising rates, I mean, it could happen, but we would make the point that the April 26th meeting is the one where, you just give yourself a bit more time to look at this and digest it. And you know, you've waited so long since 2007. Why spoil it for a month? You know, you may, or for a few weeks, you may as well be absolutely sure as you can be that you can do this, that you need to do this. That's the meeting when you're going to run some new CPI forecasts. So it kind of dovetails quite nicely. You know, the market's going to be there anyway, given if we get a decent number on the Rengo. And if you move on YCC, people will immediately come to the conclusion, if you haven't moved on NERP next week, you're going to be moving in April. And I think that sets a... You know, that's quite interesting, that dynamic for FX markets. You know, we've seen...
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Because we've got this expectation of a move in Japan. We've got a delayed move in the US. Locally, of course, you know, lower iron ore prices as well. There's a few factors playing at currency markets right now.
They are. And I mean, you know, the things that really drive the dollar are those bigger currencies like the euro and sterling and the yen, less so the Aussie and the Kiwi, although they're important in terms of what they tell us about risk. And, you know, in Europe, you've had this pretty unflattering, and the UK, backdrop. But the dollar, you know, it made some good headway earlier in the year. The last couple of weeks, it's given a good chunk of that back. And the reason for that is because, you know, Europe keeps surprising. It's had a lot thrown at it. We've talked about this a lot, and yet it hasn't gone into a deep recession. And now people are understanding. You look at the latest PMI numbers, service sector back above 50, manufacturing starting to recover. It's UK's running at 53. We saw UK return to growth with January GDP numbers this morning, monthly numbers up 0.2. we've just got the print to say that we were in a technical recession at the end of last year, and now we're coming out of it. I'd be careful about retail sales next week, because, you know, there was a big jump in retail sales in January, and February was one of the wettest on record.
So you think there's a danger that number might be revised down?
But let's not lose sight of the big picture, which is real incomes are going to improve in Europe and the UK this year. Inflation's coming down. And energy prices are more benign. They're coming down further. There's going to be interest rate cuts. And all of these things are going to be supportive for growth as we go forward. It's again, we've talked about this of better, worse, rather than good or bad. Against that, you look at things like, you know, the Citibank Economic Surprise Index, right, which looks at numbers relative to expectations. And it is Europe that's made all the running in the last few months, really. It's leading the table, UK doing well, and it's the US that's underperformed on that. And so that reverberates. And when we start to think about then, you look at Eurodollar now, you know, 109.50. It's been some time since it's looked so comfortable above 109, cable at 128. If we get a move from the BOJ, you know, next week, or some sort of move that signals a you know, an end of NERP the week after. Yeah, we know that Japanese rates are going to be very low. We know that hedging costs are all part of this. But at some point, you know, as you go through this year, you're going to have a situation where the Fed, where the US is cutting rates and Japan is raising rates. It's that it's that cross of the two, which, you know, and I think when I look at price action in FX at the moment, there's a sense that people are seeing something. We may be just at the top of ranges versus, you know, for these currencies versus the dollar, and we may need more from the Fed, but things look like they're aligning. It's an interesting time, I think.
Yeah, it certainly is. China, we won't talk about it now, but interesting things going on there, just as Australia is pushing to lift the remaining trade restrictions. Have almost done it for Aussie oil, but, you know, beef and lobsters and all the rest. The US, the news that the House there has voted for a ban on TikTok. So TikTok theoretically won't appear in app stores because they're worried about the data finding its way back to the Chinese government. Interestingly, Trump is against that decision. So he's siding with China. So he's, you know, he's just there leaving us guessing, isn't it? But that's the play in China right now. But look, today, let's go back to the US very briefly. Retail sales for February. We also get PPI and the initial jobless claims. So the retail sales fell in January, of course. Will they pick up? I mean, the expectation is that they will.
Yeah, that's right. There's an expectation for a reasonable pickup, but, you know, it's almost 1%. I think you know that if that's a reasonable number, I think the market will just, you know, limp on a little bit. I think obviously if it's a softer number, then
they'll be back talking about June. Look, very quickly before we go, New Zealand, we saw food inflation fall a bit, didn't we, year on year, from 4% down to 2.1%. So what does that mean for the bigger picture?
Yeah, I mean, looking at you know what our BNZ colleagues have come up with on this, I mean, they've actually, on the back of this, you know, we got some lower food and drink prices, those kinds of things. But as you say, you look at the sort of, you know, more luxury end of the market, and actually there are some quite, you know, and quite high prices coming through there, and that's actually led them to revise up their forecast for Q1 CPI, which will get the 16th of April.
Another central bank kicking the can further down the road, then.
You know, other things in the economy are weakening, but I mean, this is, again, you know, we get this stronger, less strong, weaker numbers. We're flip-flopping around, and it's not a smooth path. You know, it doesn't change our colleagues' view in terms of what the RBNZ will do, which is nothing until the back end of the year. But yeah, it's not a smooth path
anywhere at all, is it? All right. Thanks, Gavin.
Cheers, Phil.
And that is the Morning Call for this Thursday morning. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. I'm back again tomorrow. Fancy that. I'll see you then. Thanks for tuning in.